Hi, Chief Halton here at Fire Engineering Podcasts, and we are being brought to you by Tenkata Protective Fabrics and their Made for Life podcast hosted by Stuart Perry. The Made for Life podcast unearths the work experiences of real men and women who rely on the protective clothing and equipment to get the job done. From firefighters to industrial workers to military personnel, recent episodes explore the dangers and challenges of wildland firefighting, peer counseling for first responders, and the ins and outs of turnout gear. It's the Made for Life podcast from Tenkata Fabrics. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And thank you for listening to Fire Engineering.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Women in Fire, Fire Engineering Radio, and we are very excited to talk about some upcoming conferences that we have tonight. We have some of our awesome speakers joining. We have some supportive board members, and we're just going to talk through all the things and all the great reasons why we love being able to get together and hold conferences and learn together and network. Really, there's so much fun to be had at our in-person conferences. And our first one coming up will be August 2nd. That's co-located with FDIC. They're in Indianapolis. And I'm happy to have Allie Rothrock with us. Just a little bit about Allie. She is a speaker, author, educator, and advocate who has delivered over 500 presentations nationwide. Allie has been in the Volunteer Fire Service since 2005 and has enjoyed more than a decade as a firefighter and EMT. Allie is the CEO and lead instructor for On the Job and Off, which is an online platform dedicated to building more resilient first responders. I know my own organization has benefited from all of the material that she has within that. Allie is also the executive director of First Responders Care, a nonprofit that empowers first responders to take an active role in their community's resilience. She is a member of the Cumberland County, Pennsylvania Critical Incident Stress Management Team and is a behavioral health volunteer with the Medical Reserve Corps. Allie is a certified trauma responder through the Association of Traumatic Stress Specialists, as well as the Eastern Division Trustee for Women in Fire, which we are very thankful for. Allie is going to be teaching the right way to manage critical incident stress at our one-day leadership conference there in Indianapolis. Allie, thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
We are so excited to have you. And honestly, we've had some great response when we've had you in the past. I know you've taught both at FDIC and our conferences as well as many other locations. Can you just give us a little bit of an overview about your class?
Yeah, I'm super excited to teach it. 2021 is actually going to be the first year that I'm teaching this exact course. It was supposed to be 2020, but we all know what happened there. So I'm really excited to present this material in this way. So like you said, the class name is, you know, the right way to manage critical incident stress. And through all the work that I've done with first responders and my own experience as a first responder, I've sort of started to categorize critical incident stress and think about how, depending on the type of call, depending on the type of critical incident stress or the type of stressor, that really determines the type of support or the type of help that we might need after that. And so this course is really going to focus on the three types of stressors. That's day-to-day that first responders experience. That could be like shift work, family disruptions, sleep disruptions, infrequent stressors, which are those significant calls that might be traumatic for us, but not necessarily. And then those unique calls that are like a once in a career incident, like a big technical rescue or a mass casualty incident or something like that, that really we know we're only going to hopefully have to endure this call once in our career. And so this course is really going to focus on those three types of stressors. We're going to talk about some case studies and some things that we've learned from other types of calls that might fall into that infrequent or that unique stressor category. And then really the whole point of talking about it is to empower and educate first responders to know the right way to manage that critical incident stress for themselves as an individual, and then for their department as a whole. So not only are we going to talk about these types of stressors and what type of calls might cause different stress, but to know what to do, how to manage it, how to talk about it, how to, you know, what terms to use, what language to use. And so hopefully people who sit through the course can go back to their department and share some of the education that they learned that can better help the department as a whole be more resilient against the day-to-day stressors, the infrequent, and then especially those unique once-in-a-career calls.
It sounds like you have some great resources that come along with the training.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, if it's one thing that I've been doing this last decade, it's, you know, hearing stories and collecting stories from what has gone well after critical incidents and areas of improvement. And I'm definitely going to be talking about some of those things that we've learned from lessons, like, for example, the Pulse nightclub shooting, where the peer support and the critical incident stress management was done so well for those responders versus some other incidents, you know, maybe decades ago, where we didn't know what we know now. And to try to, you know, find a balance between talking about what could be done better and what, talking about what's going really, really well. Again, to help the first responders that sit through the course feel like they walk away with some actionable, practical tips that they can take back to their department.
I appreciate too that you mentioned lessons learned from a scenario that went really well as, you know, some that maybe haven't gone as well. Sometimes we tend to focus in the fire service on those that haven't gone well, which are important to
right.
us. But that's great that you integrate a bit of each.
Yes.
That's important. Yes. So you obviously have been to a few of our conferences, having been the Eastern trustee. I think the first time you spoke at our conference was as the keynote, which was very
yes. cool.
You did an amazing job.
Thank
what
you.
What is your favorite thing, or what do you appreciate, I guess, about Women in Fire conferences?
Oh my gosh. Women in Fire conferences are my favorite of the year. They're the one I look forward to the most. And I think the thing that I love the most about it is, you know, I've been the only female firefighter almost everywhere that I've worked for the last 15 years. And so you sort of get accustomed to not seeing anyone that looks like you when you go to work, and to really having some additional factors and dynamics that your male counterparts just can't comprehend because they will never apply to them. And so what I love the most about Women in Fire as a whole, and especially these conferences, especially after the last year that we've had where we've been so separated, is that sense of community and that sense of camaraderie, and the sense that you can sit down in any group of women that you will find at that conference and you will have some shared experiences. No one is going to question the validity of what, you know, your experiences on the job. People are going to have stories that they can share too. And more than that, it's this unbelievable sense of camaraderie and community and strength that I know I leave that conference every year feeling like so bolstered, just emotionally and just ready to go back and continue the good fight. So my favorite thing about the conference is just that sense of, oh, everybody here looks like me. Like, everyone here has had some similar experience to what I've had. And that's really, really wonderful. And it's really special.
That's so true. And I think it's also a good reminder that with you being the Eastern Division trustee, conferences are a great place to be able to see our members in person, or potential members for those who might be interested. So for anyone listening that is in that division, especially, I know Allie is so approachable. She always has been. Feel free to connect, and
please.
I'm looking forward to seeing everyone.
Yes, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
And you'll be at both Indianapolis and in Spokane?
That's right. I will be there both times.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to your class, and thank you for joining today, Allie.
Thanks, Amy.
All right, our next guest is Lieutenant Terry Reed, and we're happy to have her joining us. She's been a long attendee of Women in Fire conferences. Terry, it's so good to see you.
Thank you. Great to see you as well.
So Terry began with volunteering with the Baltimore County Fire Department as an EMT basic in Kingsville, Maryland in 1996. And in 2003, she became a career EMTB of the Baltimore County Fire Department. Additional training she holds includes the National Registry EMTP, the Hazmat Technician, Incident Safety Officer, Firefighter 2, Fire Inspector 1, Fire Officer 1 and 2, Instructor 3, and a Basic Life Support and ALS Instructor for the Maryland Fire Rescue Institute. Terry was the second African-American female promoted to the rank of EMS Lieutenant with the Baltimore Fire County Department in 2013. Lieutenant Reed has served in some of the busiest firehouses in the county. She has more than 24 years of combined volunteer and career experience in the fire service. Lieutenant Reed is a proud member of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters since 2003, and is currently their first vice president of the local chapter and a dedicated member of Women in Fire and local 1311, and we are very thankful for your dedication to all of the organizations that you're involved with, especially ours. I know I have always been grateful to see you and for your presence.
Thank you.
And you teach at this conference coming up. You're going to be teaching on August 2nd in Indianapolis at FDIC at our one-day leadership. And your class is titled Recruitment and Retention in Today's Fire Service. And we're very excited to have you. Terry, can you give us an overview of what you'll be presenting?
Absolutely. So one of the things that, and thank you again for having me, one of the things we're looking at is recruitment in today's fire service. The dynamics of people, the data, everything is a little different from what it was 10, 20 years ago. And we have to know how to keep up with the times and know how to make sure that we are attracting the proper audience so that we can get them involved in the fire service. And, you know, although we recruit them, we also have to know how to keep them engaged and retain them as well. So the biggest thing is just, hey, some ways that we can get people to engage, new ways, taking things from things we've learned from the past, things that, you know, utilizing technology and things like that in the future. So it's just going to be really, really exciting. And again, that retention piece is just so important, and just giving people something to work on when they have to utilize that retention piece to continue their career in the fire service.
And I know it seems like maybe you're going to talk through some of the data of where there are potential gaps of certain representations in the fire service. Is that something you'll be diving into a bit?
I'll be touching it just a little bit about representations, but the biggest thing, we have to look at the overall picture. A lot of things are divided into career and volunteer. We know our volunteer sector is our biggest sector, and we know that they put in a lot of their time. So we have to work on that engagement time of keeping it and enhancing the point that people want to be a part of this organization of working in the fire service. Great organization to work for. You can build so much throughout the networking, just the camaraderie with one another, men, women, things of that nature. So those are the things that we have to come more acquainted with and more engaged with.
That's great. So if you had to give, someone that was looking at their organization's recruitment needs, if you had to give them one piece of advice of how they could kind of boost their recruitment quickly or in a positive way, what would that be?
Everybody owns a cell phone. So you have to go in places to engage what people are doing in today's world. We know that just about everybody has a cell phone. So why not utilize that and track them people doing, again, virtual. We can show them virtual, you know, they have virtual tours nowadays. COVID has really opened our eyes to a lot of stuff here. So we've had to change the dynamics of how we perform and how we do things. So that virtual effect, getting in a firehouse, doing those tours, explaining the step-by-step progresses. Sometimes you have to talk to people as if they're brand new. And what I mean by that is some people teach as if the people really know it, and sometimes they really don't. So you have to break something apart and then kindly put it back together to give people an understanding of the thought process of what we do in the fire service. And again, it's just awesome that we see a lot of women that's coming in, and like I said, different ethnicities of people that's coming into fire service. So we need to make sure that we are attracting all people to be a part of the fire service so they can engage. And then we all just work together. And then that's where that diversity and inclusion comes in, that we all get to learn about one another and we just proceed from that point.
That's such great advice. I think it's so true that you really have to look towards what those who are in the market for a job are utilizing most as far as marketing or, you know, their information gathering. So I think social media presence makes so much sense. And I love the virtual tour idea as well.
That's awesome.
So you've been to a few of our conferences. What would you say it's like for those who have not ever attended a Women in Fire conference before? How would you explain the experience to them?
Well, I'd have to also piggyback on what Allie said earlier. I just feel like it just recharges my energy. I get around a lot of people that have like minds like myself. I can ask questions. I feel free to talk about certain issues and concerns that some people may not adapt to very well. And you'll be surprised how some people may have experienced something that you've been through, or either can give you some step-by-step advice on how to handle it in a professional and respectful manner. I try to tell people we have to be mindful of sometimes people just don't know any better on how to handle certain situations. So we have to take that step back, count to 10 things that we need to do to make sure that we're doing the right thing in reference, not just to ourselves professionally and respectfully, but our departments that we're representing out here and organizations that we represent as well.
That's great. I think that's such sound advice too, of taking a break and kind of a mental pause, if you will, in those times when maybe someone can't identify the same. And will you get to join us in Spokane?
Absolutely. I will be in Spokane as well. I'm really, really excited to see everyone. It's been bittersweet, if I may say the least. I did get some rest throughout the COVID, but I miss my conference and convention family. I miss seeing you all. Like I said, I miss just the sitting down, the networking, the enhancements, the recharge that I get, and I'm so looking forward to FDIC 2021 in August.
Awesome. We'll see you August 2nd. I'm so excited for you to be teaching at our conference. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day. Thank you for joining.
You too. Thanks.
So we're very fortunate to have our next guest joining us. Elisa Arnoff is an employment and labor lawyer who is consistently recognized as one of the top employment lawyers and one of the top women lawyers in Illinois. She has worked with our organization for a number of years, taking a special interest in how personnel and related matters impact the lives of women working in fire and EMS. And we are very grateful to have her teaching at our August 2nd conference. Her class will be If It's Broke, Fix It: Developing Effective Harassment Prevention Training Tools for Fire Departments. And Elisa, thank you so much for joining this afternoon. We really appreciate your time.
And Amy, I appreciate it. John Rukavina and I are looking forward to doing our program. I want to say August 1st. So it's coming up. This will not be your regular sexual harassment prevention training program. There's several things that we want to make sure that we share with attendees. And I think that the first one is that sexual harassment training and sexual harassment prevention tools aren't just a box to check off so that the department escapes liability. John and I view this as a safety issue, both for the individual, for everybody working on a shift, for the department, and for the public. And I think it's really important that we take a look at examining the tools that the fire service has been using with respect to sexual harassment training and prevention. One of the things that's been made clear to us by at least what we see is the number of rise in sexual harassment, sex discrimination, and retaliation complaints in fire and EMS. You know, is that they're rising? Is that some of the conduct we're kind of surprised that's still happening here in 2021. We feel that needs to be changed. One of the big things we'll be talking about is accountability. We're not going to talk about culture so much, but we will talk about accountability and how that starts from the top down. And we need to work with the chiefs, we need to work with the mayor's office, with the city council, with the city's attorney's office. We need to make sure that everybody understands that they're accountable if harassment is reported and if harassment is not investigated or remedied. And we need to make sure that there's going to be discipline if it happens, because unfortunately, as we've learned, unless there's discipline, people don't seem to learn from the things that have happened. With respect to the training, we do need to make sure that this is training specific to fire and EMS. The fire service is unlike any other workplace. There's no other workplace I'm aware of that you're, you know, working, living, sleeping, and eating with people for at least 24 hours at a time, if not longer. And that raises a whole host of different issues. So this isn't something where you can just watch a video that's been mass produced for either a manufacturing environment or for an office environment. It really needs to be geared towards the needs and lives of firefighters and paramedics. And we'll be talking about how to do that. One of the other things that we've been proposing, and we're seeing it happen in a few cities, is that we need to see this training, it's got to start happening at the academy. Because one of the things that I hear in my role as an attorney is that women are getting beat down, they're getting harassed, they're feeling like second-class citizens when they enter the academy, and they're being bullied throughout the academy. So by the time they are full-fledged firefighters, they think that they have to tolerate this, and it's just part of the culture. It's not, it can't be, and we need to make sure that our new firefighters understand that. I'm hoping we'll see a shift. I think that what I'm going to call the millennial women look at things a bit differently. I think they're more likely to complain. I think they're more likely to understand that there's certain conduct that they don't have to put up with. So we hope that we'll see a shift. And we also want to see it at the other end. But one of the things that I'd like to see is reporting and investigation scenarios, both in promotional exams and at assessment centers. I mean, one of the things is, and it's not just in the fire service, it's in any work sector, is we promote people and we don't necessarily give them the skills to manage people. When I teach a personnel law 101 class for new company officers, one of the questions I'll ask is, how many of you knew this is what you were signing up for when you became a firefighter? Nobody's hand goes up because nobody thought about having to make personnel decisions and having to terminate people, how to investigate people. They thought they were fighting fires. They thought they were, going to be investigating arson. So we need to make sure that we're doing this at both ends and that we're only promoting people who understand the responsibilities that they have with respect to sex harassment. One of the other big things that we're doing is we'll be talking about intervention. John and I are both big believers that if you understand what sex harassment is or could turn into, that everybody has the power, depending on the comfort level, to step in and stop it before it gets worse. Obviously, it's going to depend on your position within the fire service, how long you've been there, who the target is, who the alleged harasser is. But we think everybody has the ability to report or to step in and change the dynamics of the situation. And my experience, at least when I've been doing these types of targeted intervention training, is we are seeing a decrease in complaints of harassment. One of the other things that I think we've been deficient in with respect to the fire service is explaining to people what retaliation looks like. If someone complains of harassment or discrimination, whether it's sex harassment, race harassment, religious harassment or discrimination, everybody has the right to be free from retaliation due to their complaints. And they also have the right to be free from retaliation because they participated in an investigation. And we as lawyers, we write these great policies and we think everybody knows what it means, but we really have to start training people as to what retaliation looks like. It's not just firing people or changing people's shifts. It might be excluding people from lunch. It could be screwing around with their PPE. It could be spreading gossip or rumors. And we need to make people understand that not only is the harassment the problem, but we've got to make sure that there's no retaliation going on. And again, I think we'll be ending the program with the focus on safety. I think that's something that people haven't looked at. Again, that this has just been kind of a check off the box thing. If someone feels they're being harassed and they're going on a call with their harassers, they're not going to feel safe. And if they're not going to feel safe, their teammates aren't going to feel safe. And if the team isn't feeling safe, the public isn't going to be safe. And it just gets worse and worse. You know, it's something we're really passionate about. Our hope is that people will be able to take home checklists, regardless of what your rank is, that you're going to either be able to use yourself or to take back to your chief or your HR department and say, these are the things that we need to do to reduce harassment in the fire service. And, you know, and we're excited about it. I mean, this is the first time we'll be talking about doing this with respect to sexual harassment or retaliation specifically, because these things raise some different issues because we have sexual assault and battery and things that we don't see in other cases.
Well, it sounds like you've got quite an agenda and honestly, a very thorough, much needed one. And something that I kind of thought about as you were explaining everything is that, you know, sometimes we'll be in a space where someone will say, is that really still an issue in regard to sexual harassment? Not in my organization. From your perspective, what would your response be as far as what the pulse of that is in the fire service?
You know, I think if somebody tells you that this doesn't go on in our department, it's either one and out and out lie, or it's not having an understanding of what harassment is and the different forms that it can take. I mean, you know, we may have, and I'm talking with my hands, even though you can't see me, I'm trying really hard to, Rachel, stop laughing at me to keep them still. You know, I mean, we have sexual assault on one hand, which I think we often say, you know, that's sexual harassment, that's pretty severe. But we can also have such things, if a woman is coming up with ideas and someone else is taking credit for her ideas, that's sexual harassment, because sexual harassment doesn't necessarily mean the act of sex. It's targeted at somebody because of their agenda, because of their gender. If you're always assigning the women to clean up the kitchen or do the shopping or assign them these womanly duties, that's a form of sex harassment. If you're holding women to a different standard of conduct, it's fine for the men to make an aggressive entry and that's really brave. But if a woman does something that, you know, might not be in the book, you know, that's wrong and she gets written up. So those are types of sexual harassment as well. And I think we'd be hard pressed to find any type of work environment where there's not even some form of subtle sex harassment. We're just not there yet. And I think it's because people really don't know what it is that they're looking at. They think about the end. You know, we read about the cases where somebody puts a hidden camera in the bathroom, and you know, those are the more extreme cases, but there's much more subtle harassment going on every day in the fire service.
Yeah, that's a very good point. For an organization that was looking into doing kind of an internal look and maybe hasn't done anything in regard to training yet, or, you know, putting some processes in place, what do you think would be some achievable first steps to start down?
You know, I think I kind of look at it as three different steps. Is one, you want to make sure you have a department-wide training where everybody's understanding, you know, from your new firefighters all the way up to your chief. Again, understanding how to recognize what sex harassment and retaliation is. then I think you need to take it up a little bit for your company officers. I don't think company officers realize that they have additional responsibilities and they can subject the department to liability once they're an officer. Right? And so once they're made of something, I mean, they've got to understand what sex harassment could be so they know about their reporting obligations. And then the third is in some departments, the command staff is in charge of the investigations. And, you know, to me that, you know, that's a much more advanced step, but making sure that command knows the parameters of an investigation. We try to teach how it's similar to operations, so it doesn't sound like such a foreign concept, how to get the support that they need. So right now I'm looking at it as a three-step process. And then of course, what I'm gonna call the fourth and fifth step is making sure we get it in at the academy on one end and we get it in at promotional exams and assessment centers at the other. You need to have somebody that can talk fire. You need to have somebody that can understand fire and public safety. And your chief officers need to be there. If your chief, that's really important. They have to be engaged. One of the ways we talk, you know, we try to emphasize how important this is, and I hate doing it, but sometimes you've got to talk about the pocketbook or the wallet. You know, if we see a $6 million sex harassment verdict come down, you know, that might be the cost of a new firehouse in Hoboken, New Jersey, you know, that the money could have gone for. So, I mean, maybe we need to start throwing numbers at people so that they understand. But again, it's 2021, and it's, I certainly didn't think when I started practicing 30 years ago that we'd be seeing the rise in these cases as we are. They really should be going down.
Wow. Well, and I appreciate, like you said as well, that maybe those who are on the receiving end of the treatment are a bit more empowered to speak up or to know when something isn't necessarily as it should be.
Yeah, well, right. But I mean, I also want, you know, you, Amy, for example, if you feel that someone is treating me incorrectly, I want you to know what power you have.
That's good.
You know, to step in and stop, you know, to step in and stop it, whether it's a check-in with me to make sure I'm okay, or, you know, John is the one that's saying things inappropriately, that you can go talk to John and say, hey, you know, are you having a bad day? That wasn't really appropriate. Why don't you go speak to Elisa about it? Because if we can stop these things before they blow up,
right,
that's really where we need to be. And yeah, a lot of them are just misunderstandings. You know, when we have to do investigations, it's bad for morale. It's bad for overtime costs because we're typically interviewing people off shift. It starts gossip and rumors. And we really want to teach these intervention tools for people.
Good. Well, we certainly appreciate the fact that you and John have both put this together. And I'm looking forward to hearing about it and seeing you in person. Will be great. And you've been to a few of our conferences. What would you say is unique about a Women in Fire conference, maybe into comparison to some other fire conferences?
I grew up in a neighborhood where a woman would have never considered being in the fire service or in the police service. So when I kind of fell into this in 2010, this is a brand new experience for me, that there were, you know, all these women firefighters and women chiefs and female paramedics, because where I grew up, it just wouldn't have been that way. And I just found everybody so welcoming. And, I know about five different types of halogens, which is really useful at cocktail parties. And, you know, just the collegiality and just the learning in so many different ways. And, you know, somebody who does harassment and discrimination law, some things that I never would have looked at, like your uniforms, or, you know, I'll pick up a piece of equipment and realize, well, I can't lift this over my shoulders. If it was built differently, I could rest it on my hip. Or these, you know, the railings on the truck, you know, are for people who are 6'3" and I'm 5'2". So, I mean, it really opened my eyes. I asked a lot of questions that I thought were stupid questions. Every once in a while, I'm told they are stupid. But for me, it's really been a welcoming community. And I'm, you know, pleased to count a number of my colleagues from Women in Fire as my friends. And I'm in awe of every day of what you do. And I think you really have to go to the conference to get it. I just think you really do. You know, and the men at the conference seem to really get it too. I mean, the men that have come to the conference really seem to be allies in a lot of different ways. And that's something that's really impressed me as well.
That's awesome. Well, we feel the same about you. We're very excited to have you. We'll see you in Indianapolis on August 2nd. And thank you for your time this afternoon.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
All right. Next, I am happy to have our own Western, Division Trustee Lisa Baker joining us. And she is a retired battalion chief. She spent 29 years with Oakland Fire. She is a trustee with us currently, and she was so generous in letting me take the reins on this show. She actually has been our coordinator of the Fire Engineering radio shows for a time now, which we truly appreciate. Lisa, thank you for joining.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for having me.
And I'm so excited that we are able to have you teach this class again. You'll be teaching Preparing for a Successful Assessment Center at FDIC on August 2nd. And I personally have taken that class at least a couple times and benefited greatly from it. Can you give us an overview of what that class entails?
Definitely. So to be successful in anything in life, you have to basically understand what you're getting yourself into. So a lot of people don't prepare for an assessment center. They spend a lot of time, if there's a written exam, preparing for a written exam. And then when the assessment center comes, they just think that they're going to kind of wing it, so to speak, and that it'll just be a fire incident. And as the last speaker spoke about kind of like soft skills, and assessment centers actually do have a lot of soft skills involved. So what we talk about is what is an assessment center? How are they developed? Who develops them? What are the dimensions? Each exercise has different dimensions, which is what the assessors, who are the people that are grading you, is looking for. So, and the assessors are actually trained in the assessment center process and the assessment center. So they come in a day ahead of when you're taking the test. The consulting company is there with members of the agency, and they go over the assessment center. They go over the exercises with the assessor so that everybody understands what the department's looking for. So everyone's on the same page. So we go over what an assessment center is, and then how is it developed, and then the type of exercises that you're going to encounter in an assessment center, the dimensions that each exercise are looking for in that particular exercise, and then we go over the different types of an assessment center. So your assessment center might be recorded, where it's you go in, everybody goes in the same day at the same time, usually like in a big auditorium or a school. They record everyone at the same time, and then they bring in assessors a couple of days later and they watch videotapes of you. So there's no interaction with the assessors. Or it could be live, where you go in and you're looking at a tablet and the assessors are actually in the room and they're interacting. They're asking, the questions are either on the tablet or the assessors are reading the questions, and you have to answer the questions and interact with the assessors. So it's real important that you know what type of assessment center your own agency uses. And then the exercises, some people have this notion that an assessment center pretty much is just a fire situation where they're going to show you a fire and they're going to ask you to put out the fire. And that's not the case. They have situational exercises, which sometimes are called personnel problems, which the last speaker spoke about, that they should have some kind of sexual harassment problems. And actually the last four or five assessment centers I've sat on in the last year have really concentrated on personnel issues and harassment issues. And there's still, as she mentioned, a lot of work that needs to be done. Some people get very uncomfortable with that part of the assessment center and don't really want to deal with it. They kind of just sidestep it. And if it's for a captain or a lieutenant, it's kind of like, well, I'm just going to pass it up to the chief. So when you're preparing for assessment center, you obviously need to prepare for all the types of exercises that would be in an assessment center. So we'll go over those in this class. We give an example of what constitutes a good answer as opposed to what constitutes a great answer. And you get more points for the more information that you're giving for each exercise. So we'll go over that. And then we have actual exercises that you could practice on in the class period. And then we have some at the end of the PowerPoint where you can practice on your own so that you understand, you know, what actually to do. So we try to take what I've learned. I mean, I've sat on numerous assessment centers. So I try to, you know, each time I go to an assessment center, kind of take a little bit more information back and include it in the class so that when people come to the class, they know what an assessment center is and what they're actually getting into.
Awesome. Thank you for that rundown. I think what I appreciate is that you bring a couple different perspectives to the training itself. One being that it's more of a preparation for the assessment center itself and the test itself rather than learning what the job is of promoting into a different role. And then also that you, as you mentioned, there can be different styles of centers and different assessment tools used. So I think it's great that you have such a well-rounded approach to teaching those who are interested in what they could expect or what could come up when they make that next leap.
Yeah. And another thing is, and we actually emphasize the point of you should start preparing for an assessment center almost the day you walk in the door if you have aspirations to be a lieutenant or officer or chief or anything beyond a firefighter in your agency. So it's kind of, you know, you have to learn the job that you're in to learn the next job, so to speak. So it's not, I mean, we don't try to just teach people how to pass an assessment center, but what the exercises would be and such as well.
Yeah, that's great. And that is very true. I think those that don't necessarily have that mentality, for at least from the time they get off probation or from early on, tend to have a bit harder time with it.
I agree.
Well, great. And you are our Southwest Division trustee, and you'll be at both Spokane and Indianapolis. So I would encourage anybody that is in that area or would be potentially interested in being a member in those areas to reach out to Lisa and connect with her and get to know more about the organization or what's going on in that region.
Definitely. I mean, you can send me an email if you're unable to attend the class and you want information on the class, just let me know and we'll send you the PowerPoint and talk with you personally on the phone or however via email. But we encourage you to come to our conferences.
Thank you, Lisa. So I'm going to ask you to hang on the line and we're going to talk with Rachel, who's our second vice president for Women in Fire, Rachel Stibel. And I'm going to let her give a little intro on herself and talk about what we've got going on for hands-on classes there in Spokane.
Hey, Amy, thanks for having me on today. My name is Rachel. I'm a lieutenant with Colorado Springs Firefighter. And as Amy said, the second vice president for the organization. I'm heading up the hands-on training for our conference in Spokane at the end of September. And anyone that knows me knows I'm very excited about the hands-on training. It's my favorite thing about our conferences. It's what I got hooked on in 2009 when I attended my first Women in Fire conference. So this year we're going to have a lot of the feedback we've gotten from previous conferences is things that gals want to see more of. So this year we're going to have Nozzle Forward once again, just like we did in Fairfax. That's going to be a 2-day class. If you sign up for Nozzle Forward, that's what you do the entire time during hands-on training. Should be another great class. That's just a fabulous class. If you've ever taken it, feel free to sign up for it again. If you have not, it's great to do the first time. Really great hose management skills being taught in that class. Spokane's got a couple people that have come over from Fairfax, and they're putting on a 2-day stress inoculation class, a really good class basically on how to get used to the stresses that we have inside the IDLH. The class is designed to stress you out. It's designed to test your mental strength. It's designed to be a difficult class. It's 2 full days. If you sign up for that class, you're in that class for both days of HOT. Well worth it. It's a 16-hour class and we've got nothing but positive feedback on it. Like I said, stressful, nerve-wracking class, but it's awesome because it teaches you how to perform when you're under that kind of stress. So highly recommended class as well. It's going to be tough to pick from all these. And then we're going to be doing some auto extrication. That's a 1-day class. Again, we've got some really fabulous instructors coming out for that. We're going to rip up some cars. They're going to teach you just some really good tips and tricks with the tools. Just a good chance to get out there with other female firefighters and get your hands on the tools and tear into some cars and buses and whatever we feel like getting out at the scrapyard for you guys. Search. We've got some really good people coming out from Lincoln Fire Department to teach search. They're going to do one class per day. That's pretty limited. So if you're interested in learning any of that search and firefighter survival stuff, that's going to be a great class for you to get in on. You can take it one day and then take some other classes maybe the next day of hands-on, because we're going to be doing two days total. The schedule is a bit goofy, so you got to look at it online, but it'll make sense once it's out in front of you. We're going to be doing forcible entry class. That's going to be offered twice a day each day. Just basic irons work, basic banging around on doors and getting into your average single family dwelling doors. And then we're going to have a ladders class. The same gal that taught out in Fairfax from Aurora Fire here in Colorado is going to come out and teach in Spokane. And she's fantastic. If you've ever met her, she's about 5'3" and that girl can throw the ladders around. So she teaches really good body mechanics. She's going to go over a lot of things with the ladders, and it's basically just 4-hour class on just banging ladders around, which is really, really good time spent. And then Saws Vent, Steph from Minneapolis is going to come out and teach that again. And she's going to do basic overview of a vent saw, chainsaw. A lot of gals haven't had their hands on those tools. And so that's one of my favorites, because it gives us a chance to feel comfortable with that and just some good run time, some good cut time. So that's always a super fun class. There's not, you can't hear much the rest of the night, but it's a fun class to attend. And it's just a good way to get your hand on the saw. It's not something a lot of gals get a chance to do. So we're going to have a little something for everybody, 2 full days of hot. Like I said, look at the schedule, pick the classes that you want, make sure they can all work out well. And there's a little bit of something for everybody. It'll be beautiful weather, and bring your gear and let's go get dirty and play with stuff. So that's hands-on in Spokane.
Awesome. Thank you for putting all that together. And I know that we have a new functional trustee that's going to be engaged in that as well this year. Lily Yancey from the East Coast out there in Baltimore area. So looking forward to everything that you ladies and everyone else involved have put into this. I know you pour your heart into it, and we get just such great feedback about how valuable it is to have that hands-on time.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I enjoy doing it. I'm bummed I can't be out there just swinging a tool, but yeah, it'll always be the one thing I think is so, it's what drew me to the women in fire service, to iWomen back in the day, was really that hands-on training. And it'll always be near and dear to my heart on that stuff. I don't want to sit in a class for 3 days straight. I want to go out and throw ladders around and bang on some doors. So yeah, happy to do it. Happy to help. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody out there. And if anybody has any questions, please shoot me an email and we'll get you as quick as we can.
Awesome. Thank you. And you'll be both at Indy and in Spokane?
I will. I'm teaching a little class at Indy, just a classroom session. My first time kind of doing a classroom thing that's not related to fitness. So we'll see how that goes. Should be fun. Just because I'm not, you know, high level chief business. I'm just kind of down and dirty with what I got to talk about. So I'm looking forward to Indy. I'm excited to see some gals that may not make it to Spokane, but super excited to see everybody out in Spokane and have a good time and just really enjoy the conference.
Awesome. Thank you. So I thought we would just talk for a few minutes. We're all board members. We've all been with Women in Fire for a bit now, and I'm just going to talk a bit about what aspects of the conference we appreciate and what we're looking forward to. Lisa, you're still there. What would you say you're most looking forward to about our conferences coming up?
I think the opportunity to see people that we haven't saw since last year. We obviously didn't have our conference as scheduled. We had to put it off a year due to COVID, but I think the opportunity to see people, interact with people, get the word out about Women in Fire, especially at FDIC. I remember the first time I went to FDIC, there was not a lot of female firefighters there. And once we started doing our leadership conference, the amount of women firefighters that you see at FDIC now has increased, which is great to see. I think it's the comfort level is there. I mean, a lot of conferences, you go to, it's all males, and some females don't feel comfortable with that. So I think by us being at FDIC, it really helps not only Women in Fire, but probably FDIC get a more diverse group of firefighters there, especially the females. And in Spokane, it's just the it's just great to see all the different people that we usually see at our conferences, and then you get to meet the new people that we're going to see there. And just in the networking and the opportunity to talk to people and network.
Yeah, I have to say too, I'm always very, as I think Elisa mentioned earlier, impressed by the men and their interaction in our conferences too. And really that's the point of our conference, is to be an inclusive space for everyone who's at least like-minded in inclusion and progression and growth, to come together and learn and network. And I think that's just such an awesome aspect of our conferences.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, Amy. I mean, it seems like the last couple of years we've had more and more men actually come to our Women in Fire conferences, and they're huge supporters, and they take the information that they learn from our conferences back to their own agencies and are huge advocates for us. So I have to agree with you on that.
Rachel, what do you think you're looking forward to most?
I mean, I always enjoy getting together with all the, because we're still firefighters and we're still ding dongs and like to have fun and just, you know, swap stories and be entertained. So I'm never not laughing or having a good time at our conferences. But I think the thing I like the most about going to the conferences now, as a participant, I'd love to just go see other women in the fire service. Because even in my job where we do a good job and we have a lot of women, I don't see a ton of them. And so I think that will always be something fun for me. But now in the position I'm in and having been with the organization, I enjoy meeting the members and seeing what we can do for them. I want to know I'd meet every single person at every conference and just say, hey, how can we serve you better? Is there something we can be doing better? Hopefully you like what we're doing. I think just meeting the men and women of the organization and just making sure that we're on the right track and seeing if there's anything out there we can do to help them or make their fire service career better. Just help the organization advance, but honestly help it advance in a way that our young women in riding backwards can be successful. So combination of both. I enjoy the good times and the camaraderie, and I very much enjoy meeting the members and seeing how we can further the organization and make their lives better. So those are my top two favorite things.
I like it. That's great. No, I think honestly, it's just, for me, I think it's just an atmosphere unlike any other I've experienced. I'm sure I've mentioned this to both of you, but you know, I have had the fortune of being able to go to a few different conferences throughout my career, and this one truly just is it's just a different vibe. And I think we all do feel refreshed and kind of re-energized after spending a few days with people who are positive and, you know, wanting to learn and wanting to goof off a little bit, you know, at times, but also taking some of the hands-on stuff seriously or the classroom aspects. So I think it's also kind of a neat space to come together and really learn about some topics that maybe you wouldn't necessarily sit down and immerse yourself in otherwise. But definitely looking forward to it and happy that both of you will be there. Does anyone have any wrapping comments they'd like to add in?
I think you hit it. I'm excited. You're excited. We're all excited.
I'm real excited. Looking forward to it.
Good. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening in. We, of course, again, will be at FDIC on August 2nd. We've got so many amazing speakers. Our keynote speaker for that conference will be Chief Tricia Wolford. She'll be kicking off the day, and she is just such a solid act, a very, very classy chief, and we're looking forward to having her kick our conference off on a good note, and we'll have many other presenters at that. We'll be there throughout the week. We'll be there later in the week at our booth. I'm speaking later in the week on health and wellness issues for women in the fire service, so feel free to look me up at that. We do have a few of our other board members speaking either at our conference or throughout the week at FDIC as well. Whether or not you get to come to our conference, make sure you hit us up if you see us walking in the hallway, or if you have a chance to stop by our booth, we would love to connect and get to know you a little bit. And if you aren't able to make it to Indianapolis, please try to join us out in Spokane. So September 28th and 29th will be our hot classes. And then 30th and October 1st will be our in-person sessions and lecture style. We have networking events each night. We have a 5K on the 1st. We've got a lot packed into a few days, but honestly, we like to make a big deal of it and take advantage of all the time we have together. So thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you hopefully soon.